Welcome to episode 235 of Five and Dive. It is Tuesday, August 23rd. I am your host, Craig Goldstein, editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Joining me as my co-host today, Jeffrey Paternostro, lead prospect writer for Baseball Prospectus. And I'll start with an apology. I think I said I'd see you all on Friday. I went to Saber 50, which was up in Baltimore, to try and catch a couple of people. It was also my fifth anniversary. So we ended up not recording. Jeff said, don't rush home and record in like the spare time you have between Baltimore and going out to dinner. And so I didn't. So I apologize, but we're back here on Tuesday. Lots of stuff has happened. We probably could have, there definitely could have been an episode in between. But I think by waiting, we got some additional news. So that's nice for once.
By recording later, we got some additional news.
Yeah. We got, for once, something doesn't break right after we record in the space between recording and posting the podcast. So that's a win, I think, for everybody in the end. I do want to start, Jeff, before we get into our first topic. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but I do think we need to address the hot dog and the beer.
Sure. I didn't actually put it on the agenda because you think it was staged.
I am leaning towards a conspiracy minded. So, I mean, let's just set the scene for people who might not have seen it. You know, sure. If you weren't on baseball, if you were on Twitter at all for like an hour of Monday night, you couldn't have avoided it.
But I didn't even watch the Mets Yankees game because I was running around like touring daycares and stuff and then making dinner. And I still got this. And I don't even think I think I saw it before you sent it to me too. So
there was a guy who has purchased a hot dog. This is at the Subway Series. This is at the
Mets Yankees. It's like a $12 hot dog too.
I'm sure. You see him take a straw and hollow out the dog.
Yeah.
And then proceed to lean forward, pick up his beer, drop the hot dog in the beer, and begin to take a sip via the hot dog.
Right. As you noted, he did already have a straw, so this wasn't like a makeshift.
Right. This wasn't like an emergent. I guess an emergency. I mean, just drink straw, a beer out of the cup. I mean, it's fine. Like, you don't need to. But to your point, what you said was like, we don't need to be recording people and putting them on the internet. Like, I don't know if this guy agreed to this or not, but I guess
you think he did.
Because well, right. I don't know what I, but what I was going to say was, I hope, I mean, on some level, I really do hope that this is an op, like that this is a staged setup, because I mean, first of all, it's disturbing. It's a disturbing set of actions, in my opinion, on behalf of the guy. It's also, to your point, I think a little disturbing. Like, if this guy wants to be a weird guy who drinks beer through a hot dog, like, let him be that guy. It doesn't need to be put on the internet, or at least, like, blur out his face or something. I don't know.
If you want to, like, you know, make fun of him with your buddies in the stands surreptitiously, yeah, that's pretty fucking weird, man.
Yeah, go no, I mean, it, I will judge like, it. I'm going to judge it. I've seen it.
Don't
do
it.
I have to respond.
Don't do it for the clout or whatever, for the hits. So you can promote your SoundCloud page underneath it or whatever. Like,
right.
Trying to go.
And I agree with that. Yeah. Like, this guy is entitled to his weird privacy. Yes. And even though he did it in public,
right.
Like, he's entitled not to be plastered everywhere.
Not put on blast.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Not to be put on blast. Exactly. But like, all of that being said, it's upsetting. It's upsetting to have witnessed for me.
Yeah.
I believe he's entitled to it. I want him to be happy. God bless, whatever. I wish I had not seen it.
Speaking of upsetting beverages, I guess, I have discovered out here that this is a LaCroix town, Craig. I cannot get polar. It's all LaCroix.
Oh, that's upsetting for you?
Upsetting
I'm drinking a LaCroix right now.
I am too. Is that your hibiscus?
What flavor do you have?
I got watermelon.
Watermelon's just okay for me. I was a little disappointed with it.
I like it because it's like a little, it's just like a little like agua fresca kind of refreshing. It's very,
yeah, I can see that.
It's not like aggressively. Some of the citrus ones I get a little bored with like the aggressively citrus nature of them. So,
right. No, I get.
I kind of like that this is. I'm not bland per se, but.
Okay. Well, since that took place in the Bronx, why don't we stay there for our first segment? The Bronx is burning. The Yankees, well, they beat Max Scherzer last night, but they continue, broadly speaking, to be a mess.
It is. They had the big Josh Donaldson walk-off grand slam, too, and then immediately lost three straight games to the Blue Jays before winning the finale.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit weird to say, but, like, it's kind of hard to think, like, if Josh Donaldson hadn't hit that grand walk-off grand slam to win by one, like, it's only one game, but at the same time, it seems like, well, now they're 2-3 in their last five, which isn't good, but isn't awful. But it seems like a big difference between 1-4 or however many they've lost. And they're way under 500 since August. They're under 500. You know, their last 7 weeks have been middling at best. Things did not look again. They beat Scherzer yesterday, so things were okay. I feel like in the broader scope, things are still trending negatively when you're looking at Jordan Montgomery throwing a complete game yesterday. He has a sub one ERA for the Cardinals. Montas has a 9 ERA in his time.
That's
as a
higher.
Yankee. Yeah, that is higher. And you know, they've got again, Domingo Germán pitched all right yesterday, but has been pretty bad, and he's only in the rotation because they traded Montgomery. I think that deadline looks a little weirder still for the Yankees, you know, just looking back on it, even than it might have at the time, or at least all the negative kind of perceptions of it are playing out.
I mean, it's
out.
Also like worked. It's worked out as badly as it really could have. And like, it's not that there wasn't risk. Like Jordan Montgomery is a perfectly fine mid rotation-ish starter, and
he's just perfect for St. Louis. Honestly, is the thing. Like they have the strong infield defense. He doesn't miss as many bats as you think. He gets ground balls. Like it's just a perfect upgrade for that team.
And Montas, look, he's a very talented pitcher, but he's had a bunch of arm injuries, including and up to around the literal trade deadline.
Right. What he had, like, under five vague starts right beforehand or something.
It's like vague shoulder soreness or whatever. Yeah.
And I guess we should note Scott Efros is hurt. Another part of their deadline.
The bullpen's a problem outside of Ron Marinaccio, who might be closing for them by the end of the month. Loaizaga's not having a good season. Chapman lost the closer job to Clay Holmes, who then lost the closer job. So they're in. You can pitch to that lineup now. You know, they had to call up Oswaldo Cabrera and Esteban Florial to cover for some injuries. And, you know, Aaron Judge continues to be Aaron Judge. Hit a home run off Max Scherzer last night. Anthony Rizzo is having the basically the same Anthony Rizzo season we've been talking about all year. Benintendi seems to be turning a corner a little bit after an awful start to his Yankees.
He's
career.
Hitting his singles.
And DJ LeMahieu's been okay, and that's like then you have the 5-9 in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean Rizzo has been hurt too. He was out for a little bit. DJ LeMahieu was banged up a little bit. Giancarlo Stanton is supposed to come back Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
They're anticipating activating him.
They just need to be able to lengthen the lineup right now, and they don't have the bats to do it. I know Jarrett suggested in an article today they call up either Anthony Volpe or Oswald Peraza, but you know they just seem fairly committed to Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at shortstop for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like that was the plan and that's what they're going to do. Yeah. I mean, I do think a healthy Yankees lineup can support those dead spots, but they largely haven't.
They certainly were in the first half of the season.
Right, exactly. Well, but, you know, some of it also is like right now Jose Trevino has a 106 OPS plus.
Mm-hmm.
It would not surprise me if Jose Trevino goes through a period of like being a 65 OPS plus guy. And that kills your line when your lineup is already short on some, you know, on shortstop and center field
Right.
in terms of that. Like now you're adding a full, you know, that's a full third of your lineup. That's a dead spot or something like that. And that's if someone else isn't performing. You know, Gleyber
I mean,
Torres has.
Josh Donaldson hasn't really been hitting Grand Slam aside.
Right. Torres has been up and down overall this year. I think, you know, look, they called up Oswaldo Cabrera, like you said. You know, the team loves him. Like, he's a spark. The fans love him. He has a three OPS plus in 22
I think
at-bats.
He'll be better than that, and he can play a bunch
yes,
of
course.
Yeah.
It's a three.
He did literally drop a pop-up in that.
And I
want to
point out, like, it's Esteban Florial is also up on the team. They're cycling through center field options. He's got a negative 43 OPS plus in the same number of it's 20 at bats.
He might just not hit. Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, but like that's a problem.
That's really bad. Yeah. It's not good.
And it's a very small sample. I'm not trying to say this is true talent or anything like that. But the point is, like, even if they're 60
those
or 70 or whatever, they do count. And they're counting in these games where they're not producing. I mean, that's ultimately, like, they're not getting on base. They're not keeping the lineup moving. They're not turning it over to the top of the lineup that can actually hit. And the other part of this, you know, again, that we started with is the pitching. I mean, this is, I know I mentioned this last time or I think this was on the, on our playback when we were watching the Dustin May start, but this is what I've been talking about. When we were talking about how high the Yankees were flying for so much of the season, I said, they're going to hit a rough spot where the pitching isn't everything, you know, that it had been. It had been league leading. It had been better than the Dodgers. It had been tremendous. And it's not going to last. Like, there will be a rough spot. Now, I didn't expect a rough spot to be necessarily this bad, where the offense and pitching crapped out on, you know, all at once. Or if you want to categorize the rough spot as the last 7 to 8 weeks, like, I didn't expect it to last this long. Mm-hmm. Again, we can talk about all this. They're an eight game.
Yeah.
They have an eight game lead over the Rays right now in the East. They're a lock for the playoffs. They're extremely likely to win the division. I guess I just think, like, what this does is it shows that they're a flawed team, right? Like, there was a large period of this season where it looked like they were, like, there was no way to get through them. You know what I mean? They fought back. They did all this stuff. And I think this just says, like, there, you can pitch to this team. You can get to their pitching, et cetera. Like, there's not the belief that, like, they're going to get you in any capacity like there was early in the season.
Right. And, you know, in 2000, obviously they were terrible down the stretch and won the World Series. But I guess A, that was 22 years ago. And B, it never, like, this was, it was just like the regular team having a bad stretch, where this is like, you know, there's very real injury and durability questions. You're like, look, they go off and win the pennant in the playoffs because anything can happen in the playoffs. And the top of their lineup and pitching staff are as good as any team in the AL. So, but yeah, it does feel, I mean, would you be surprised if they, like, lose in four in the ALDS to, I guess it would be, you know, it would be the Blue Jays or the Mariners.
I
think they'll beat the AL Central winner, in all honesty. But
it would not surprise me. I mean, that's just within the realm of possibility for almost any team. I mean, look, I guess I shouldn't say that. It would surprise me if they lost in four. But it seems very possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I would favor them going in that situation, but it's obviously possible. And I think, you know, I mean, especially if you want to get into the nitty gritty, like, there are a bunch of starts. Garrett Cole hasn't shown up like we expect him to. Mm-hmm. I mean, he always ends the season kind of around a three ERA, despite having, I mean, there's like a tweet out there that's like, every every five or six starts, he just, you know, he gives up six earned runs in the first two innings of a game. And it's true. I mean, he gets it down to three because then he'll end up pitching seven innings and giving up six runs or whatever. But you know, I think he's done, obviously he did that in the wild card game last year. He struggled a bit. I think he has that in him. And then your next best starter is Nestor Cortes. And I'm not trying to throw shade on Nestor Cortes. He's been very good, but like, can he be beat? Certainly. This bullpen, all of a sudden, you know, again, Efros is down. Lou Trevino hasn't, they're having him throw the slider more, but he hasn't been good like they've expected or hoped for. Like you said, Clay Holmes is on the IL after being inconsistent. You know, I mean, this is a beatable team. I guess the other question before we depart the topic is, I mean, they are now behind, and I think we talked about this early on, like Houston was going to be in play for catching them. Houston has caught them in the AL for the best overall record. I think Houston's a better team. I assume you do.
I agree. Yep.
They're behind on run differential, but I don't think that's really representative of the teams that they are right this moment. And I do think Houston's better. Again, if you want to go to the other side, how many teams do you have better than the Yankees overall? So Houston in the AL, I think they're probably the only team I would rank better in the AL. Dodgers, Mets, Braves.
Yeah. That's probably the list.
So that puts them at fifth.
Yeah.
It's not hugely surprising, I guess, but it is a bit of a fall from grace, right? From where we're talking 2 months ago, this team was
going to threaten the Mariners like win record in the season.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know. Just again, like it's 2 months of 500 play or whatever. I don't have the results in front of me, but I think it's around 500. But let's see, 13-13 in July, 6-14 in August. So, I mean, it's really August, but they were 22-6 in June. I mean, it's really August that's killing them, but it really, I don't know. It does change their perception substantially.
I mean, at this point, if you include July and August, it's like almost a third of a season they've been this below 500 team.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not insignificant.
No, it's not. And it's not, and I mean, the tough part was even in July when they're 13-13 and below 500, they're outscoring their opponents by a significant margin, right? It was these one run losses and things like that. And there's still losses. I'm not trying to, you know, sidestep that. There's still losses, but
it felt like when a blip, you talk about team, it no longer feels like a blip.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I do think they're going to get it together. I do think they're going to finish stronger than this.
I'd be shocked if they go, you know, 19-8 in September or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know their schedule the rest of the way. I actually just was trying to see.
I assume they're playing a lot of AL East teams, but
we had a tracker. We used to have a tracker. They have, where is for your edification, Jeffrey, the Mets have the second easiest opponent win percentage the rest of the way.
I'm well aware. Okay. Their September schedule is very easy. Outside of, I think they have Milwaukee and the Dodgers at home, but it's a lot of Mets. They still have to play six games against the Pirates, I think.
Yeah, I think it's Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
The Yankees are like 13th or 14th. Easiest, so right around the middle. 494 win percentage against the rest.
Again, they'll be fine. They're going to win the division. They're going to win 96 games or whatever. And
yeah, I mean, I think what I was going to say is I would have them likely to win the division by 10 plus games.
Sure.
Like, I think they're going to build this out. I don't think they're just going to.
There's also an alternate scenario. The Rays stay a little healthier, the Jays get out of their own way, where this could be a real division race now, but it's not.
Yes, it could be, but it seems unlikely. Yep. I will also note the Mets have six against the Nats, three against Oakland, and seven against Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
which only second best. Seattle has the lightest schedule the rest of the way. While we are talking about things burning, Jeffrey, our second subject, Chicago Fire. I wish it was Chicago Fired, because that would actually be useful. He's not, though. Tony La Russa is still managing. Should we say, is he managing? Is he just existing?
The White Sox are still like only, what, 2.5 games out of the division right now.
The White Sox are 3 out of the division.
Okay.
They are 4 out of the wild card. Has Tony La Russa cost them 3 or 4 games this year?
I think probably through either in-game tactics, roster.
Speaking of which, he walked another guy on a 1-2 count.
He did, since we last recorded. Also had Michael Kopech throw 20 pitches on a bad knee.
Yeah, Kopech came out for warm-ups to start the game, to open the first inning, to start the game against the Royals. Was this yesterday?
Yeah, it's yesterday.
Yeah, Monday, the 22nd. Had to have trainers come out and look at him. They looked at him. He stayed in the game. I believe his first pitch was 88 miles per hour or something like that. He was down generally 3 to 4 miles per hour.
Yep.
Across the board. It appears to be a knee injury. It doesn't necessarily mean it's serious. It sounds like this is something that has been bothering him for a little bit. He's had a knee issue before, and it sounds like it's just been like pain tolerance, and that he couldn't land on it the way he needs to pitch. But as Jeffrey said, La Russa had him come out for about 20 pitches. He retired none of the batters he faced.
Yeah, that would be correct.
Did he? How many did he face? 7?
4. I thought 4. He faced 4. It was like walk, single, hit by pitch, walk, something like that.
Yeah, he gave up 4 runs. Did not get an out. I believe the White Sox didn't get an out for the first 7 batters they faced. Again, this is against the Royals, a game they should and need to win in a tight division race. They're 3 back. They lost this game, I think, by 2 runs. They lost this game. They could have been, you know, 2.5 or 3. I mean, they.
There's been a lot of games like this.
Is there have been a lot of games like this, but at this stage in the season, this really hurts.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously losing Kopech hurts too, but
yeah. I saw a noted rational White Sox analyst Nick Schaefer say that.
Oh, boy.
I think this is actually correct. It's like they just want to lose their way, right? Is the thing. It's almost, I don't even know if La Russa believes this is going well, but he's not going.
Well, it's not.
Adjust.
It's not going well. I think we can all agree. Like, there's no way he thinks this is going well.
Yeah, I guess. But it's
like, we should also note Yasmani Grandal in solidarity has a knee issue.
It's very much the principal Skinner. Is it, you know, is it, am I at fault? No, it's the children who are wrong, basically, has kind of been Larissa's abiding philosophy.
They did run off a few wins in a row, including against Houston, to stay in this without Tim Anderson. They've brought in Elvis Andrus, who was released by Oakland, I think specifically so he didn't hit a vesting player option for at bats. And look, that's a nice pickup for them.
It is, yeah. He's still like,
they were playing Romy Gonzalez
right
at shortstop,
and August, you know, mid-August waiver claim, functionally level talent. You know, Andrus wasn't awful this year.
No, he had a 97 OPS plus in Oakland. I think some of that, he's getting the benefit of a park factor that doesn't super apply to him, because he's not hitting for power really anyway. But he did hit much better on the road. He has not hit super well for the White Sox. But again, even just getting his glove at shortstop is a big, big win for them, given who they were running out there. Because not only is Tim Anderson hurt, but Danny Mendick was also their backup shortstop already out for the year. I believe Leury Garcia is banged up and has been pretty bad.
Andrew Vaughn's still playing the outfield semi-regularly.
Andrew Vaughn's still playing the outfield. Gavin Sheets still playing the outfield somewhat. Yeah, I mean, this is just, I mean, Yoan Moncada has been terrible this year. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. This team, if they were going to underperform, I don't know.
I mean, they've underperformed exactly the ways you would expect, right?
You would think, but I mean, even then, I wouldn't expect Lucas Giolito to be this bad all year.
I mean, conversely, Dylan Cease is going
to
get.
I was going to say, I wouldn't expect Dylan Cease to be this good all year. And Johnny Cueto.
Johnny Cueto, yeah.
I mean, not to bleed too much into our next topic, but what year is it, Johnny Cueto? Advanced metrics do not care for what Johnny Cueto is doing, and who gives a shit?
Yeah, like,
he's still doing it. He's incredible. I absolutely love it. This is some real.
I mean, he's always, even like peak Cy Young contender Johnny Cueto, outperformed his peripherals, yes, or whatever. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. These peripherals are.
This is
right
different. This is different. Also, like, you watch him pitch, and you're like, well, you know, peak Johnny Cueto was like, you know, 94 and 96 occasionally, yeah, whatever. This is like 88, 92. Yeah. It's different. It's different. It's different. Very enjoyable.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is happening, but I love it. But yeah, I mean, this is, and you know, not only Giolito, but like Lance Lynn. Now, yeah, you could argue, you could see that after the injury that he missed some time last year. Last year he was literally a Cy Young finalist.
Was there too at the beginning of the season, and
I think everyone thought Dallas Keuchel was pretty much done.
Sure, but apparently, but the Lance Lynn still rolled him out there for 2 months or whatever.
I think you do that sometimes, yeah, just to open the season, keep your options open. But Lance Lynn was a Cy Young finalist last year.
Yeah.
Now he's had health issues when he's normally been. Well, I should say normally, but like the last, you know, since his Texas era has been very durable. But yeah, between him and Giolito, I mean, you're easily looking at the three to four game gap we're talking about here. Even if you regress Cease a bit, or say like Johnny Cueto isn't pitching quite as much. I mean, again, if Lance Lynn is healthy, Johnny Cueto's not pitching quite as much. So, I don't know. It's a very weird team. Again, they have a negative 31 run differential, and they're two games over 500. So I don't think they've been unfortunate on the, you know, in terms of the production on the field in a lot of ways, you know, translating to wins, but they have also left a massive number of wins on the table, if that makes sense.
Do you think they, I'm going to say win the division. Do you think at any point they are tied for the division lead or lead it outright before the end of the season?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Let's go.
I do. So I actually, so this is one of those things where I think they will, and they'll probably never actually do it. They're just going to sit here the entire, in this space, the rest of the year, before finishing last week.
How many games over 500 will they be, Craig, when they are tied or in the division lead?
Oh, I mean like four.
Okay. I'm trying to level set here.
Yeah, no, I mean, this division is not good. I think like four games over 500, and they might, I'd feel more comfortable to say that they have like a share of the division lead. Mm-hmm. I think they could tie it. And then they're going to like, it's like they're going to do that. They're going to get Tim Anderson back and immediately fall apart or something like that. Like that is the narrative that plays out in my head. Okay, I mentioned it before. Our third topic, what year is it? Albert Pujols, Jeff, has like seven home runs in his last 12 games.
Best 10 game stretch of his career, yes.
I don't, that's a staggering thing to say.
Yeah.
Like people, I want to be the guy doing this, but people forget. People do forget like how good Albert Pujols was.
I mean, he said this is like the Simpsons problem, right? He's like half a career in decline at this point. He spent as many years being this version of Albert Pujols as he was the good version.
Right. Right. I'm not saying it's, I'm not blaming people for forgetting really, but like it is easy to forget how dominant he was. And he was Mike Trout, right? I mean, like it was like he was the guy. He was the only answer for the best player in baseball for a significant stretch, or at least best hitter in baseball for a significant stretch of his career.
He was the best player on two World Series teams.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't, it really is a staggering thing to say he's having the best any game stretch of his career. Because his career is, he's a stone cold Hall of Fame lock. Yeah. I mean, I am not this, as we know, neither of us are really Hall of Fame, but is he like, he's like inner circle Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the, third best first baseman of all time, depending on how you want to adjust for the arc of difficulty across the history of baseball.
And like in his 22nd season, he's posting the best 10-game stretch of his career.
Yeah, I mean, some of that's just, you know, Boras' law stuff. But yeah, I know what you mean.
No, I get it. I'm just saying, I'm marveling. I'm just marveling. Like, he has a 150 OPS plus this year.
That's good.
The other question, Jeffrey, is...
Has that actually raised his career OPS plus? Had he gotten under 150?
That's a good question. Let's see. Yes, it does. He has a 145 career OPS plus.
Yeah, so I mean, by Jaws, he's the second.
And by the way, that's with 5 straight years of an OPS plus never breaking 92.
Yeah.
He still has a 145.
He's the second best first baseman of all time by Jaws, surrounded by, like, okay, Lou Gehrig, obviously, is Lou Gehrig, is number one. Jimmy Fox, Cap Anson, and Roger Connor. Like, none of these TV wasn't invented when any of these players played. You have to go down to Jeff Bagwell at 6 to be like something. I mean, obviously modern era, but anything resembling the modern era baseball. And he's like 17 wins better by Jaws than Jeff Bagwell, who was a hell of a player.
Was a hell of a player in his last 10 games.
Yeah.
Only seven starts in this stretch. I'm going to note. 548, 576, 1258 slugging percentage.
It's pretty good.
He's had seven home runs in 31 at bats in those 10 games.
Yeah. Does he get to 700? He needs seven more.
So what? He's at 693 right now. Seven home runs. Well, we get a week into October. So we're talking six and a half weeks left.
It's like 40 games. Yeah. It's on like a 28 home run pace for the season.
That's tough.
It's tough. He's still going to be seeing mostly lefties.
Right. He's not playing every day. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm going to say no. The hot take I had yesterday in the span of a few minutes was that both the hot dog guy and Albert Pujols, second half Albert Pujols, are ops.
Are ops.
Like, are they just going to, is someone going to feed him a cookie to get him there?
Yeah. I mean, maybe, like maybe if they wrap up the division with 4 or 5 games left and he's close, they'll obviously start him the last.
They'll give him an opportunity. If they've run away from this, from the Brewers.
Yeah.
Do you think someone helps him out?
Yeah, maybe. You get like the.
I think it's possible. I think that's the
Michael Strahan moment or whatever.
Right. I mean
that's harder to do in baseball, right? Because you can put the cookie there and you can still pop it up.
Definitely. Definitely.
Who is it?
I'm going to tell you this. I'm looking at the Cardinals schedule.
Yeah.
I don't have pitchers, obviously, but
sure.
They have 3 against the Braves at home.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go 3 at Cincinnati. That's good. That's good for business.
Yeah.
Home versus the Cubs. That's probably pretty good for business.
Mm-hmm.
Home for a 4 set against the Nationals.
Very good for business. Patrick away, Corbin just rolling.
Away for 3 against the Pirates.
Yeah.
not bad for business.
So like this is the thing when you go over like the schedules on the stretch, Craig. There's just a lot of bad baseball teams right now.
There's a lot of bad baseball teams. Two against the Brewers, then four at home against the Reds. Sorry, five. That's a 5 in 4 days mm-hmm. against the Reds. Then Padres, Dodgers, Brewers, Pirates at the end of September into October. Six straight against the Pirates to end it. We could get a cookie.
We could get a cookie, yeah.
We could. Unfortunately, ending the season in Pittsburgh as opposed to home against Pittsburgh. But yeah, we could. I could see that. The schedule, the number of bad pitchers he's going to face, seven home runs, it's not impossible. That's a lot of bad pitching.
Yeah.
He's going to be really close. Now, the better question is, if he's really close and the season ends, is he actually retiring?
I could see him just being like, I'm done. Like, I don't know if he's particularly concerned about chasing the yeah. round number at this point.
So my only other question on this topic before we take a break is, between Juan Soto last year mm-hmm. and Albert Pujols this year, can we get a real argument that the home run derby not only doesn't break swings, but it fixes them?
Maybe.
Well, you think about it. Listeners can think about it. We'll take a quick break and be back in a couple. We're back with episode 235 of Five and Dive, as usual, going around the horn in segment four. Speaking of Albert Pujols and the last 10 years, we've got the Angels.
Yeah.
The Angels are on the block. Artie Moreno, right before the podcast started, announced that he is exploring selling the team.
That means he's probably, this is like the, you don't announce this unless you're planning on selling the team.
Correct. He's selling the team.
He is selling the team. Yes. This is the 10 PM Ken Rosenthal tweet of teams are moving closer to an agreement with a free agent. That means the deal's already done.
Right. Right. It is over. He's going to sell the team. One has to imagine this is good if you're an Angels fan.
Yeah.
At the same time, the most Angels fan thing is to imagine that it must be good situation only for it to work out. Right. Even so worse than like, it had
this
before.
Is going to sell for an obscene amount of money, probably even more than the Mets, I would imagine, given the.
You think so?
They're working on, they got a new stadium deal in the works. He's not saddled by the same kind of debt the Wilpons were that has to get cleared as part of the deal.
That's true.
Just franchise values keep going up is the other part of it too.
There is a bubble. Like there's,
I mean,
a,
it's all a bubble, Craig. So
yeah.
But whatever, it's going to be an obscene amount of money, and you know, who's actually buying baseball teams nowadays. It's more media conglomerates and hedge funds and, you know, Steve Cohen types. And I don't know, I've already seen this kind of bandied about on Twitter. I don't know if the league would sell to another Steve Cohen type.
Yeah. I mean, I know back when the Dodgers, before Guggenheim, when the courts bought them, there were other, when billionaire owners were less commonplace, I suppose. There were like philanthropists. Eli Broad was one of them. I know there were others. And the phrase that stuck in my head was like that they did not want a West Coast Yankees or a National League Yankees or whatever. Which is funny because like, I can't really imagine a better thing for like baseball's popularity in general than like multiple teams that are actually trying very hard and winning. Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question to wonder, like, do you want, not do you want, does the league want this? I want it, certainly.
But I mean, it's not like Artie Moreno didn't spend on his team either. There's a lot of no, other
he just
things
did it.
That came
he just
up.
did it weird.
Yeah. He made it weird, yes.
Do
you think this means Ohtani gets traded?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think he was ever re-signed, right?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that the other team doing this is the Nationals, right, are going to get sold. And they use that as pretext to trade Soto.
Well, I mean, that's like, yeah. I guess it actually is a very similar situation, although Soto obviously had far more years out from actual free agency. You know, the actual thing you'd want to do in this situation is clear the Mike Trout contract because of his back issue. They probably can't do that, or neck issue.
Yeah. I mean, I don't...
I mean, to be clear, teams should be trading for Mike Trout if he is available.
But... I was going to say, like, I don't know... Yeah, I don't know if you want to trade Mike Trout. They might, but... I mean, I guess the question is, like, again, they really use the impending sale. At least it was brought up enough in media that it would be a reason to trade Soto. And it does seem like this iteration of the Angels can't really stomach trading Ohtani. Right, even though it's probably the right thing to do because this iteration of the Angels can't win with Ohtani and with Trout. And so it, you know, he's again, I don't think they're going to sign him, he's going to leave them. It seems like they had backed themselves into playing out the string, and maybe now with a sale, they have found a way to not play out the string and say, we can trade him, someone else will take over. Like, Artie will wear that and he'll go away and be a very rich billionaire with all his billboards or whatever, and it won't matter.
I have to say, I do love the phrasing of this. Today, Angels Baseball announced that the organization has initiated a formal process to evaluate strategic alternatives, including a possible sale of the team.
What is a strategic alternative that isn't selling the team? Like, right. I don't know.
I guess selling like a minority share or something.
Yeah, I guess. Again, he's insanely rich and doesn't...
We haven't even talked... I guess there's nothing really to talk about the weird stadium land deal, because I guess it's just, broadly speaking, under investigation, but I do wonder how much that has to do with it.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of negative stuff
yes.
around the organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the Eric Kay trial, there's right the deal with the corrupt... city officials that are under investigation, as you're saying,
like what, a year removed from the Mickey Callaway stuff,
right? Yeah, exactly. There's a lot in it. I mean, look, I think it's good if Artie's leave, broadly speaking. I do wonder, you know, who ends up showing interest. I will say, I thought while we're on the subject and going around the corn, one of the things floated out there recently was that one of the owners of the 76ers and New Jersey Devils.
Yeah,
I think it's Josh Harris.
Yeah, he was one of the finalists for the Mets.
Listed as a finalist for the Nationals. And I thought the one thing that stuck in my head was that I thought, wait a minute, isn't the guy who's going to end up the majority owner of the Guardians the owner of the Sixers and the Devils? And how does that work? And it turns out that's David Blitzer, I think. And he is going to be the majority owner of the Guardians. And he does co-own with Josh Harris, the Sixers and the Devils. And I think that's going to be real complicated if you have two guys owning different MLB franchises who co-own an NHL and an NBA franchise. I don't know. That seems like muddier waters than I'd want if I were the league. But, you know, hasn't seemed to stop him.
Buying Norwich City.
What's that? Oh, right. And Mark Attanasio is buying Norwich City. And right. So we've got a lot of multi-sport ownership here. All right. Any other thoughts on the Angels and Moran? Do you think percentage chance Ohtani is traded this offseason?
75.
I was going to say 80. Yeah. I think it's very likely at this point. In other AL West news, that's a transition, Jeffrey. Mm. That's what I'm sticking with. John Daniels was fired a mere 48 hours, I believe, after Chris Woodward, the manager of the Rangers, was fired. Both shocking and also not surprising at all in yeah, a way. I don't know like if those coexist super well.
The
but
order of operations here is a little weird, I guess. But outside of that, I happened to catch a couple minutes of their owner actually talking because I was throwing on.
My condolences. Yeah.
Well, I was throwing on the Rangers game because, you know, Leody Tavares. I think it was like the only afternoon game too. And it was weird.
No, I'm going to actually. I remember this. You said it was the only game on, and
Dodgers,
there was like an
Brewers
actual
or something.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, go
doesn't
ahead.
Count. It was not the most inspiring. I'll use the phrase inspiring, I guess, speech possible. I'm not filled with confidence about the future direction of that organization, but.
What's the inverse of confidence? Mm. That's what you get. Doubt? Yeah. I mean, it's.
And like they have.
Yeah, Ray Davis is not a convincing speaker.
And they have the new stadium. They're a huge market. I mean, they did spend, but then they said they're not going to spend now. Or they're going to reduce spending. So, again,
well,
as long as we're just doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting.
Doing, Simpsons references. We're supposed to catch up with the rest of the teams by going slower.
That's what I literally tweeted that
out. Did you?
I'll
tell you why I thought.
Yes, I did. Well, I'm very happy. No, because it's exactly what I thought of. So, but I will say this. I'm going to say this in very, very slight defense of Ray Davis. So the guy is. Again, like a negative, like just draws out your emotions in the worst way possible as a speaker. Like
He also
negative
is not,
confidence.
He does not seem to be particularly meddlesome as owners go. He has pretty much let Daniels and I assume now Chris Young run that ship however they want, even to the organization's detriment at times. But yeah.
But what I want to say is that what he said is we're not going to spend like last year.
Okay.
So last year, they signed Corey Seager, they signed Marcus Semien, they signed John Gray, and unfortunately, at this point, they signed Cole Calhoun. They spent a lot of money. I think they could still have spending in them while still not spending like last year. Now,
they've got a lot
the way he
of
said
holes
it,
to fill, yeah.
Yeah, the way he said it, and in the context of everything else he said, it makes it read like, we're not going to spend.
Right.
It isn't specifically what he said, but like to Jeffrey's point and what everyone was kind of reacting to that day is like, this guy's communication skills absolutely suck. And like, if he actually meant he could have said we're still going to spend, but it won't rival last year. And I think a lot of people wouldn't be nearly as upset.
Right.
And yet, they were upset because this guy sucks. Like it's the slightest defense possible. And it's really a critique in that, like, if he actually meant the thing that you could twist his words to mean, like he did a terrible job of communicating. But what I was going to say was like the shock here is not, I mean, the Rangers have been bad for 6 years at this point. So it's not surprising in that respect, but it is a shock in that John Daniels has been with this team since it was 17 years.
Yeah, mid 2000s. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, 2005, 2006. I think so. I mean, this guy has been in charge of this team for a very long time. The most successful period of this franchise. While he was in charge of the team, and this. Look, I think we've talked a lot, which I think just within the last couple of weeks, we've talked about this franchise being like in a very confusing place. So I don't think it's wrong to make a move here. His contract was up at the end of the year. I mean, I do think it's weird that you have him involved in the decision-making for a draft, for a trade deadline.
Yeah, this happened with Avila too. It's like, it sounds like this is just gonna be Chris Young's ship to steer, and he might have
right. And Chris
Young
was
been,
there, so
right,
I understand.
So he might have been warm on the DM.
Right.
It's a weird
John
situation
because
you
not
can't
have been...
right. You can't just like bring in your even if you kind of know who you want to hire. It's probably somebody else's assistant GM. You're not getting them in August.
Right. And I understand. You know, Chris Young was there, and it's probably been his ship for a little bit now, even if they were working together. He's been there for a couple years at this point. The weird part to me is Ray Davis said, I did know I was going to fire John Daniels. John Daniels didn't know. And I knew this during the Chris Woodward. I mean, like, it's just a very weird thing to fire the manager, have a press conference where John Daniels is out in front of this, like, answering questions, and then saying a few days later, we're dumping John Daniels. And on top of that, Ray Davis, who doesn't talk to the media a ton, and we see why, a great decision on his part, is out there talking about it, and in the announcement saying, we've been bad for 6 years. Like, this has gone, like, these recent things haven't lived up to ideals. Listen, honestly, like, this guy, John Daniels, who has come out, who has been part of this organization for so long, and again, presided over the most successful run in franchise history. Like, I don't know that it's great optics to come out and say, here's where he's failed. You can just say, we really appreciate his time. Look, people know what the team's been the last 6 years. You don't need to put it out in a press release.
And I
think what a lot of Rangers fans were upset about, and what I sympathize with, is that I think they thought John Daniels deserved a little more graciousness than he got in terms of a departure. Again, his contract was up at the end of the year. Just tell him you're done. Leave. We'll announce it at the end of the year. If that's what you want to do. It just seemed very odd for a guy who, you talk to different people than I do in a lot of circumstances. I've never heard really a bad word.
Yeah, I haven't either.
About John Daniels.
I think the general view in the industry was it was time for a change there, but.
Sure. Yes. There are reasons to do this. No, there's no argument.
No, they've been bad for 6 years, Craig.
Yeah, no, it's completely reasonable.
Right.
And they've kind of gone, but they also did it in the worst way possible.
They did. They never really committed one way or the other. They didn't see like an overarching organizational strategy for the last 6 years. I don't know if that's specifically Daniel's fault, because some of that's going to be contingent on what ownership wants to spend and where they want to spend it. But yeah, I mean, everyone can, you can all look at the baseball reference pages for the last few seasons. And
well, you can also look match them up with the Cots pages for the last few seasons and see how they've been bad when they haven't spent, and when they did spend, they were actually pretty good.
Yeah, and I like, look, again, I
that's a Ray Davis problem, maybe, not a John Daniels problem.
There may be outsized expectations for how good they were going to be this year based on their off season. They needed more than three players.
Yeah, I mean, if those were the expectations, that's the people's fault. I mean, everyone could have told you this team was not going to be in that spot just yet.
Right. I mean, have they probably underperformed a little bit? Yes, but again, I think, could you have seen them as like one of the last wild card spots if stuff went a little better? Sure. Stuff did not go well, and that's
I'm going to pull up. I have a preseason Pecota file. We projected them at 70.5 wins, so that's either 70 or 71 wins.
Pecota's they're pretty damn close, aren't they?
They are at a 459 win percentage right now. That is 74 win pace. So we'll see how the end goes, but if that's just one projection system, obviously. But again, like, if a fairly objective point of view, if you want to just pick a projection system and say, like, what were they projected at? I think somewhere between 70 and 75 wins would cover most of the projections. And they're going to end up between 70 and 75 wins in all likelihood. Maybe a touch better, potentially on the high end. It is what it is.
Yeah.
You all couldn't see it, but I made a face. Like, what are you going to do? So, yeah. Let's move to a franchise that is having a bit more success than the Rangers. The Atlanta Braves extended Michael Harris. It was what news floated out about this, and then within, I think literally within 30 minutes of the game ending, the Braves social media posted
again,
as they are wont to do.
Once the national reporters are tweeting about it, it's probably already done.
Oh, well, with the Braves, usually you don't hear about it till they post it themselves. So the fact that we even got a leak of this at all is surprising. I don't know if you have the contract terms in front of you. I can pull them up in a second, but it was something like 8 years for a guaranteed $72 million, possibly extending as much as 10 years and I think $102 million. I think the final 2 years were something around $30 million. Does that, am I in the ballpark?
Yeah.
So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this deal?
Jarrett and I got into a little bit on For All You Kids because we had a question about the Atlanta's policy for extending young players versus the Mets never doing that. It's Jarrett thinks it's a better deal for the player than I do because I'm higher on Michael Harris than he is, I think.
Okay.
But I get it, right? Like, he's only really had 150 at-bats above double A or above A ball in double A before he got called up. His, right. 40, if you look at his underlying swing decisions, his stat line feels a little unsustainable. He chases a lot and eventually, he's running a 73-13 strikeout to walk ratio in 290 plate appearances. Like, that's not an awful contact rate given his power. And ultimately, this is never going to go bad for the Braves because the defense in center field is so good that even if he hits 240, 250 with a little bit of pop, he's going to be a good regular.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's not a skill set that gets paid in arbitration or free agency without some top line offensive numbers.
A good point. That's the incentive for him to take the deal.
Yeah.
Is that like he gets the money in a way that, again, like his real value doesn't get recognized so much in arb years, which is tough for him.
He's also 21 and hitting 286, 328, 503 in the majors.
Yeah. I mean, do you buy that slugging percentage? I know he had a 500 in double A.
Yeah.
In
I mean,
43 games.
It's like a 25 home run pace. Yeah. I buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can hit for that much power. Like, I really like Michael Harris. I think he has some 30-30 seasons in there. This could also be the best offensive season of his career.
I think there's a case that it might be the best offensive season of his career. I don't, and to your point, I don't think it, I think it can be the best offensive season of his career and the Braves can come out looking really pretty on this. I think there's very little chance they come out looking badly, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, like, I hear you with what it sounds like Jarrett is saying is, you know, this is a sub five.
He's a third round pick. He did not get a big bonus. He gets, you know, he's barely.
I mean, credit to what this Dana Brown, right? For the Braves. I mean, they do an incredible job drafting these guys, especially locally. I mean, I got into a conversation with someone on Twitter, I think a Cubs fan, about why the Braves do this, seem to have success with this and other clubs don't. And I do think other clubs do it, just not as often as the Braves. And I think, first and foremost, Albies and Acuna's deals give them a type of security in which they get to then, like, reinvest those savings, essentially, into these other deals.
Yeah.
Because they're just going to bank so much value off those two guys alone.
Yeah.
The other part of it is, if you look at all these extensions that they've signed, these are all local guys, basically.
Yeah, Jarrett's theory was these are one of the advantages of, first of all, Georgia's a baseball hotbed, so knowing
Austin Riley's Mississippi, but he grew up probably a Braves fan.
Right, that's the other thing, is the TBS Superstation games.
Yep. You get Carolina guys.
Southeast. Yeah, I mean, I could get Braves games growing up in Connecticut. Yeah.
I did, absolutely, in Maryland. And so you get, I mean, but I know this, people from North Carolina are generally Braves fans, Mississippi, generally Braves fans. At Georgia, obviously, big hotbed. Michael Harris is from Georgia. Austin Riley is from Mississippi. Matt Olson is from Georgia. I'm not saying hometown team is the reason these guys are extended. They're offering them pretty fair money, I think. I don't think these are insultingly low offers, like I think for Acuna and Albies,
right?
Which were, to me, insultingly low. I mean, the other point those are bad deals
that Jarrett made is that this is the third most guaranteed money a 0-1 player has ever gotten.
Right.
Now, right. The other two.
I mean, this
are,
beats Luis Robert's deal.
Yeah, the other two are Franco and Acuna, who are significantly better prospects than Harris, but also got a fair bit more money. So,
and Acuna had time in the, you know, more time in the majors.
Yeah, more time in the majors. And had been better. Yeah, literally won Rookie of the Year. Yeah.
Which I think Harris is going to do. To be quite honest,
he very well might. Yeah.
But I do think there are some concerns on. Again, the walk rate a little bit. They were always good in the minors. I think it'll come up some. I just don't think. Yeah, I don't know. He's a phenomenally fun player. I have zero. Yeah. And again, I think this deal is not. It is certainly in the team's favor, but that's right. Going to be the case, to Jarrett's point, when you're talking about a 0-1 guy, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And, yeah, there's no. I mean, short of literally like I guess Tatis was 1+, but.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be the case in this situation. But I think given kind of the circumstances, with the givens that we have of these kind of early contract guys or early service time guys, it's not a bad offer. And it's not a bad and I think that's the same thing with Riley. Like they got a nice deal. We talked about it, like I think $21 million a year is a nice AAV for a guy like Austin Riley. It's also over $200 million. I don't think he got shorted.
Yeah.
I don't think Matt Olson really got shorted. I think this is a lot of cost security for this team. And these aren't like hyper team friendly offers. I think this one could look that way.
Right. This is the other thing with like, and not with this deal, more with the Riley and Olson deals. Like, you can play this out. You know, you can Aaron Judge it, right? You can turn down the big number and play it out to free agency, and maybe you'll make more in the end. But like, how much more are you going to make? And Aaron Judge has to do it for 1 year. Michael Harris has to do it for 6 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So anyway, I don't know. I don't think it's. I think everyone saw that the Atlanta did this again and thinks like, oh, it's immediately a steal. I think it has a very solid potential to be a steal. I think the first 6 years of Michael Harris's career are likely to be a steal, right? Like that's kind of the case when you're a good player, is that you are a steal for the team for the first 6 years of your career anyway. So and look, I think the option years on this are pretty. You know, you've got $5 million buyouts and you've got.
Yeah.
A $20 million club option and a $15 million club option for 32 and 31 respectively. So I don't know. It didn't seem like a bad situation for me. Speaking of extensions, Max Muncy, the Dodgers did this kind of with Blake Treinen earlier in the year. They've now done it with Muncy. They guaranteed his 2023 club option and extended him for a year, I think with a $10 million baseline and up to $4 million in what I would say are pretty easily attainable incentives. It's all, I think, either games played or plate appearances or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some weird model thing they have for these kind of contracts. They might do it with Bellinger,
too. It seems like
a
steal. I know he's having the worst year of his like Dodgers career, but like he's seemingly figured it out now, and the baseline is like a guy who can't hit but can walk a lot and play a bunch all over.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, again, the Dodgers can pay $14 million to a guy like that if they need to. Mm-hmm. It seems like a nice deal for the Dodgers. And Muncy gets his guarantee for next year picked up. Or sorry, his option for next year guaranteed. You have here on the rundown Nate Fisher King. I know Nate Fisher is the guy who came up, he was what, an insurance sales? No, a finance guy. He worked at a bank. And then like came back to the Mets briefly, called up because they're cycling through guys at the end of their roster right now. Pitched
three scoreless innings, got DFA'd.
Yeah, well, welcome to the big leagues.
Yep.
Also, see ya.
Yep. And there was a great Mark Canha like post-game quote because he had just like come in on the taxi squad
for Anya, Jeff, please.
Yeah, for that doubleheader. And he's just like, yeah, I didn't even know who that guy was. I didn't know he was a baseball player, but he pitched really well.
I mean, who are the two guys they just brought up? I didn't know who they were.
Again, they've had like Sam Clay, Rob Zestrinski was up recently. Jose Budo started that game.
No, I do know who Zestrizny is.
Yeah, he's been up.
I don't know who Clay is.
He's with the Phillies, I guess. He's just a lefty. He's a lefty. The lefty reliever.
Connor Gray. That's the guy I just called up.
Yeah, he's like 28 years old. I think he was like a senior sign a bunch of years ago. He might have been an indie ball guy. It's hard to keep track with the Mets.
I mean, I'm just
saying.
They
don't have a lot of upper level pitching depth.
In Mark Canna's defense, I don't know who some of these guys are either.
Fair enough.
And
it's more your job to know than his.
Yeah, that's true. Lastly, I assume this is that Bryce Harper's rehab was sponsored.
That's it. Yes, it's fine. But I mean, he's also on rehab.
He is on rehab. He's coming back. That should be big for the Phillies, currently, let's see,
they're a game and a half. They up are on currently two up on Milwaukee for the last
tied with the Padres, a game and a half up on Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So yeah, that will be very big for them. I did know. Alex Coffey noted that it was sponsored. I think all their rehabs are sponsored. Yes. But as I noted still in our weird Slack channel, it's more dystopian, not less, that they're all sponsored. I saw someone else point out that the Seattle Mariners have a pizza rehab.
Mm.
It's like always like something pizza rehab. And like that entails, I don't know. That's a very weird phrase to have to say. I will also note, speaking of Alex Coffey and the Philly beat, she had a note about Bryson Stott being challenged by Gene Segura to use his two strike approach all the time. And that's kind of what's unlocked like a nice few weeks for Stott at the plate. He's dramatically over the last few months reduced his swinging, like his in zone strike or in zone whiff rate, that kind of thing. And it dovetailed, I should note, in the article, Kevin Long had suggested something similar, I think within a day or two before, but like, it seemed like, it was an interesting thing. Like he had been very successful with his two strike approach, and Gene Segura was basically like, do that all the time. And it's kind of like when pitchers had a really good secondary and pitching coaches were like, well, I don't know, why don't you just throw that all the time? It turns out it's good. So I don't know.
Just do the thing that you do well more, basically.
Right. Which it's just a funny, like, it's very simplistic, but when you're in it, right, it's not always obvious. And really what Segura said, he said, give me 10 games where you're only using that. And I think he went like 6-for-10 in his first 10 at bats or whatever. And Stott was like, okay, I'm just going to stick with this.
Makes sense.
So, you know, I don't know. Advice comes from everywhere, I suppose. All right. Our last segment, we'll get out of here. What are you watching?
This is a bad week for baseball.
It is.
I'm probably, honestly, my TV is showing up tomorrow along with the rest of my stuff. I might watch a little, I got to see what I have for cable, but I might watch some Rockies Mets games just on the Rockies broadcast, like live.
Oh, I think you're going to come to regret that.
Yeah.
You
got to try it once at least, I suppose.
We do have 16 games today because we get a Cardinals Cubs doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
One of those games already underway. Yeah, there's not a lot of matchups between two teams that actually, the Subway Series right now.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned Red Sox, Orioles. You know, Blue Jays, Red Sox is going to be relevant. Twins, Astros. It's like relevant, but like
not particularly watchable. Yeah.
Yeah. Verlander goes tonight. Brewers, Dodgers still.
That's right.
And it's not a great week. It's just not a great week.
Take a break. Watch some. I don't know. Don't watch preseason football. I don't know why you would do that.
Watch some soccer. I don't know. We got an afternoon.
I don't think the Champions League, maybe the Champions League qualifiers are going right now.
We had a rare afternoon Monday. This week.
Yeah,
lead Liverpool Man United for
I'm
some
gonna go
reason.
throw I only have the radio broadcast, so I'm gonna go throw on Sheffield Wednesday against Rochdale in the second round of the League Cup after this. So.
Oh yeah, go yeah, sure. Tune into what is it, League One? Is that what
Well, this is the League Cup. It's a cup competition. They're playing Rochdale.
Right, but
League
I'm saying
two. Yeah, no, they are in League One, yes.
Or you know, throw on we've got Game of Thrones shit back in our lives,
oh,
Jeff.
God, yeah.
It's gonna be
no,
another
I'm
long
not doing,
I watched it.
We're
I
not,
watched
no,
it.
No, I'm not doing this on two podcasts in a week. Sign off, Craig.
No, I'm not gonna talk about it. I will say I started watching Abbott Elementary. I'm enjoying it through four.
We're gonna watch
episodes,
League of Their
so.
Own. I haven't started that yet either.
Once oh,
we get
nice.
The TV
very nice.
Set up, yeah.
All right, yeah. So you know, take a break.
Take a break, yeah.
There's not a lot of compelling. You know, recharge the batteries.
Binge
September's gonna
two
be a doozy.
Of Only Murders in the Building, whatever. Whatever.
You oh yeah, about. Yeah. That's out today. We caught up on that recently, so I'm excited. That's the finale today, I believe. So, yeah, we can yeah do that, and you know, we'll talk about that and some more baseball next week. Thank you, Jeff, for joining me as the co-host on this episode. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Five and Dive, brought to you by the Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network and our Patreon supporters. You can support our Patreon at patreon.com/fiveanddive. You can get in touch with the show at fiveanddive@baseballperspectives.com. We are wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network, and we'll be in that feed. Thank you again. And this week, I really will see you on Friday.